Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Nicole Thompson is here with us today as well. Happy Thursday to all of you. The last day of our first week of doing the show 4 days a week with a special episode for subscribers. I'll talk about that at the end of the show today. Welcome to our newest subscribers. Appreciate the support that you've given us this week as we expand this adventure. Coming up on the show today, we'll do Florida Port Report with my sister Miranda, who jetted back to Florida after coming to help us with our expansion. Donald Trump's campaign is demanding loyalty of Ron DeSantis supporters amid his legal trouble, so she and I are going to discuss that, plus this drama debate around what flags HOAs in Florida should or could prohibit people from flying as part of HOA agreements. Also coming up, our big story of the day is going to be around public safety and really what has been a squandered opportunity from Democrats this legislative session to make true, impactful, meaningful changes and put through laws that could actually help what's happening on our streets. We'll also jet down to Oregon for our segment Unbelievable. There is a mom of five who is suing the state of Oregon because she can't adopt foster kids because of her stance on gender identity. It's absolutely insane. It's truly terrifying. Shouldn't happen to anyone. And later on, we'll get into a couple national stories, including ABC News. ABC News, so you know when politicians, well, I'll get into it later, but ABC News made a decision to blur Donald Trump's podium during his primetime address after his charges in New York. Because it had a little number on there where you text and you get money from Donald, you send money to the campaign. ABC News made a decision to blur it. It's now calling that decision a misunderstanding. So we're going to get into some behind the scenes, because when I was working at Fox 13 in Seattle, a similar mistake, misunderstanding happened, and we'll dive into that. But let's start with our, actually first, hello, Nicole. One of the last things Daryl told us, because this week we've been all just stressed with the new stuff, and before we go on, Daryl, make us all take a deep breath. Just
breathe.
Deep breaths. And then Jay, the last thing he said to Nicole is, you look really pretty today.
He did. He's so sweet. He actually sent me, I woke up to his text. It was a very long text, but it said at the end, it's going to be good. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It's going to be good. So that's going to be a good positive day. Reinforcement. I love it. Mm-hmm. All right, Nicole, good to see you. We'll check back in with you later. Public safety is at crisis levels in Washington state. I just don't know how anyone can deny that. I get really weirded out by politicians in particular who want to downplay, for instance, how bad things are in downtown Seattle. It's like, have you walked down there lately? And then you see all the headlines around just these horrendous, brazen crimes. And I do realize, having worked in mainstream news for a long, long time, that if it bleeds, it leads, and that sometimes when you watch the news, it's not a true reflection of what's happening on our streets. But the statistics on crime don't lie. I was told, and this is a great piece of sort of advice for people who deal in, you know, politics and media, that you can't hide the bodies. You can fudge a lot of other numbers. For instance, I think there's a lot of crimes that are underreported, so you don't get a true sense of the extent of the public safety crisis. The one thing you can't hide, you can't fudge, you can't manipulate to fit your ideology, are the bodies. When people are killed, that is a statistic that is very firm. And we know that homicides in Washington state have gone up in dramatic fashion. And there is absolutely a violent crime crisis on our hands. I want to show you this article from our friends over at the Center Square that details it in pretty startling fashion, the state of things. It says violent crime is up 55% in Washington state amid a missed opportunity for reform. And one of the reasons why this is so significant, and just that statistic, and we're going to dive into it in a moment, the statistic of 55%, because it is above and beyond other places in the country. And one of the things that we have heard Democrats in Olympia repeat time and time again this legislative session when trying to excuse watering down bills on public safety is that this is a national phenomenon. I don't know how many times I've heard Senator Monica Dingra say, oh, this is a national phenomenon. This isn't a Washington problem. Car thefts are up everywhere. Violent crime is up everywhere. Homicides and shootings. Well, these statistics, and this is from, I believe, the Washington Association for Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. It's their annual report that was put out. And I have a little graphic on it that sort of I'll go through, because it explains just how egregious the increases here have been. So murder, just as an example. This is, again, from the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. It's an annual report they put out. And all of this data is going to be comparing 2015 levels to 2021 levels, which is the latest data that they have compiled thus far. So in 2015, when it comes to homicides, well, just in general, let's talk about violent crime in general as we look at, and then we'll break it down. In 2015, there were 18,925 violent crimes reported. That jumped to 29,368 in 2021. So more than a 10,000 incident increase. More than 10,000 Washingtonians, 10,000 additional reported being victimized by violent crime in 2021 compared to 2015. That is substantial, even when you account for population increases, et cetera. But then when you look at some of the statistics, again, we'll boil it down with this graphic, when it comes to murder, for instance, murder in Washington state is up 95%. 166 murders in 2015 compared to 325 in 2021. 325. And there might be other states in Chicago, they're like, oh, that's nothing. I don't care. I say this repeatedly. We're not trying to be Chicago. We're not trying to be a Baltimore. We're not trying to be Detroit. This is supposed to be a world-class state with a world-class city. And when you project that to the world, all I care about is, and it's all relative, right? How safe do we feel here, comparatively speaking? And when you have an increase of 95% in homicides, even when other states might say, oh, that's relatively low compared to what we're dealing with, it doesn't matter. It's significant. And lawmakers shouldn't want to accept a 95% increase in homicides. It's just some larger phenomenon. It's absolutely ridiculous. Also, aggravated assaults have increased by 73%. 73%. Rape has increased by over 50%. Simple assaults have increased by 13%. And when you look at, when I ever see, I see rape statistics, and you can't hide that, up 51%. And I hear Democrats talk so much about, oh, we've got to believe victims, trust victims, get justice for victims. And then I see them absolutely coddling violent criminals, pushing through laws. And this isn't hyperbole. They have been pushing through laws. Last session, they tried to push through a law. Thank God it got so much pushback, in part because of undivided viewers, that it was dead on arrival in the session, where they wanted to reduce the penalty for drive-by shooters who kill someone. And then this session, they've been pushing laws that would reduce mandatory aspects of someone's sentence. They are genuinely prioritizing criminals ahead of people who are just minding their own business, trying to live their life, working hard, and being victimized. And their priorities this legislative session show that. So when you look at that data, and again, you can't hide the bodies, 95% increase in homicide. I would ask politicians, is that what you want our state to be? Is that where you, the trajectory that you want our state to go on? And the title of today's episode is Weak, Watered Down, and Wimpy. Because at every single juncture this legislative session, at every given opportunity to make significant improvement to our public safety crisis, they have weakened bills, they have watered them down, and they have shown that they are wimpy, that they are not able to stand up to what I believe is a fringe group, even within the Democratic Party. And they are going to kowtow to that fringe of their party rather than doing what they know to be right. And again, that's not hyperbole, because you have, when it comes to the Pursuit Bill, which has been a bill I've talked about extensively this legislative session, we know the impact that the no pursuit policy Democrats passed in 2021 has had on public safety. It's undeniable. And going into the legislative session, Democrats worked with Republicans. You had bipartisan, strong bills to return a lot of the police pursuit policy back to how it was pre-2021. You had something like 20 Democratic co-sponsors on that effort. And there were enough votes of the original fix of the bill to pass it in both the House and the Senate. But again, you had Democrats who kowtowed to a fringe of their party, people like Senator Manka Dingra, who was the chair of Law and Justice, who said, that bill's not getting a hearing in my committee, even though it would have passed on the floor of the Senate. And you had a lot of Democrats who didn't push back hard enough. You have some who did. And I know, for example, Senator Mark Mullett in the Senate was instrumental to getting his party to agree to at least bring a version of the pursuit fix to the floor. I don't know the extent of what happened behind the scenes, but I am sure that he had a lot of long, heartfelt conversations with his fellow Democrats. But as that bill sits right now, it is so watered down that truly, I don't know that if the governor signs it into law, that it's going to have a significant impact on public safety. The watered down version, for instance, doesn't allow police to pursue stolen vehicles. It has, I think, 5 or 6 instances of serious violent crimes where they say, hey, if you've got reasonable suspicion that the person behind that wheel of that fleeing vehicle has committed a sex crime, for instance, has is DUI, driving under the influence, has committed vehicular assault, is escaped from justice, then you can pursue them. And that's, look, and this is going to be for Republicans. I hope there's some Republican lawmakers talking, because I know that you guys have a really hard decision ahead of you. So the way that the bill sits right now, and I don't think Democrats are going to allow it to be improved at all. So there have been amendments to say, hey, let's add pursuit of stolen vehicles, because that's predominantly who's fleeing from law enforcement. And then fleeing to do God knows what. You don't just flee from law enforcement because you're like, oh, I stole this car and like I don't want to get caught. Because fleeing is a felony. And so you're fleeing because you're fleeing from something else you did. And you know that if they catch you, you're going to get caught for that. Or you're fleeing because you're going to do something else that you don't want to get caught for. So the act of stealing a car, Democrats want to paint it as a property crime. It's just a property crime. Just let them have your car. It's not worth somebody's life. But we don't know the extent of the criminal activity of the person who's stolen that car. Not only what they have done, but what they're going to continue to do. Need I remind you of the story of Amber Goldade, who's the mother of a 12-year-old Immaculee Goldade, who was struck by a guy, Immaculee Goldade, 12 years old, walking home in Pierce County, hand in hand with her best friend from a sleepover, and a guy driving a stolen landscaping truck hits them, kills Immaculee instantly, leaves her friend Kathleen to die in a ditch next to the body of her dead friend. Is that someone who Democrats would say, well, that's just a property crime? He just stole a landscaping truck. He stole it and he used it to kill a 12-year-old girl and had such an indifference for human life that he left another 12-year-old girl to die next to the body of her friend. So I don't want to hear the incredibly disingenuous arguments from Democrats that, oh, it's just a property crime, because these people are involved in so much more than that. So when I say I want to speak to Democratic leader or Republican leaders on this, Republicans soon are going to have to make a choice, because Democrats are not going to let the watered down pursuit fix be improved. I just don't think it's going to happen. And so Republicans are in this position where they're like, okay, do I vote for this? Because at least it's something. You know, maybe you have a single incident in a year where you've got someone who committed a sex offense and we can pursue them. And at least that's something. Or do you take a stand and say, no, we're not going to allow Democrats to get away with pushing through this watered down, weak, wimpy version of the pursuit bill so they can hit the campaign trail in 2024 and say, yeah, we fixed police pursuits. And I know that that's a difficult decision for Republicans. But here's what I've said on this before. I hope you pass it. I hope you pass it. And I know I'm not in your shoes. I know I'm not in your position. I know I don't have to go out and answer to constituents. I get it. But to me, Democrats are going to use your vote on this against you no matter what. No matter what. If you vote to support the watered down version of the bill, okay, then Democrats are never going to revisit it. They're going to say that's good enough. And then they're going to go on the campaign trail and they're going to say, yeah, Republicans supported our bill. Republicans thought it was good enough. If you're a Republican and you vote against it, you know what's going to happen. Democrats are going to say, we fixed police pursuits, and Republicans voted against it. They whined for a year and a half about how you got to fix police pursuits, and then we fixed it, and they voted against it. So Republicans need to totally remove themselves from any concern for how Democrats will spin this, because they're going to spin it no matter what. That's the name of the game. It's not about public safety. It's not about serving their constituents. It's about the next election. So I need Republicans to be better than them, better than what Democrats are going to do and politicize this issue. I need them to bifurcate themselves from election years. and say, okay, this is the choice I have before me today. What is best for the public? What is best for the public? Is it best for the public that we keep the law as it is now, a complete train wreck? Or is it better for the public that we pass a version of it that will at least allow police to pursue some suspects in limited instances, but it's more than what we're doing right now? So that's what I would ask of Republicans. I know a lot of you will disagree with me on this. It's not a perfect bill, far from perfect. But when you're in the minority, you have to take what you can get. And if you want to have more of a say, then you have to find a way to appeal to more Washington voters and get yourself in the majority in at least the House or the Senate and have some sort of say in these issues moving forward. So weak, watered down, wimpy. That has been the mantra of Democrats this legislative session. The same is true with Blake, by the way. The fix for the Blake decision, the Washington State Supreme Court decision that nullified our state's felony drug possession statute. So now in Washington, you can just walk around with whatever you want, meth, heroin, fentanyl, no big deal. So going into this session again, we were like, okay, they're going to get a good solid fix for Blake. So at least there's some consequence to possessing these sorts of drugs. And Democrats have continued to water it down, to weaken proposals to have a meaningful solution to Blake so that people who are in the throes of addiction, who are dying in front of us on the streets, actually have to face consequences if they are not able to pull themselves out of that situation. And we have to have that. You have to have a carrot and a stick. But Democrats continue to weaken, 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 weaken. And it's really quite shameful. And I hope that some citizens, I hope it doesn't take you being personally victimized and seeing no justice on the back end for you to kind of wake up to what Democrats are doing, this prioritization of criminals above those of us who are working really hard every day, who want to keep our families safe, who want to feel safe when they go out, who want to be able to visit what was once a very beautiful city, Seattle, and feel like they can do that without watching their back. It's a sad state of things, and it's sad to see it politicized in this way, truly. All right, I want to talk about, I had to take a deep breath after that one, because the public safety issue makes me so mad. I mean, genuinely makes me so mad. It is truly, it's like, you know, all of us, we go about our day making sure that we're not breaking rules, that we're following, you know, Ann Davison, the city attorney in Seattle, said something on the campaign trail that I'll never forget. She said, our laws are our values. So if we're not holding fast to our laws, then we're not holding fast to our values as a society. And that's what truly bothers me, is there's a reason for these laws. There's a reason that we put them there. So as a society, we have our values in place and we say, hey, these are the rules that guide us as a society so we can be the greatest country in the world. And when we're not following our laws, we're not following our values. And it seriously annoys the hell out of me. That wasn't very, it annoys the hell out of me. I know that wasn't eloquent, but that's where I am. All right, we have our newest, we've been talking on the podcast. If you're a business owner, small or big, 5 employees, 50 or employees, this is an awesome deal, and I really hope you take advantage of it. MethodWorks is our newest sponsor to the podcast, and they are doing all things tech for businesses. If you need new computers for your employees, you want to get on the cloud, but you're like, what the hell is the cloud? I have no idea. I mean, I know Daryl will tell you I'm very not tech savvy, so I need all the help I can get. And also, they're offering a free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring to undivided listeners and viewers. So that's a tremendous value, a great opportunity to make sure that you're protecting your data, you're protecting your customers' data. One, I was talking to Mark Harmsworth, who's a former state rep who owns MethodWorks, worked for Microsoft for years before going out on his own. And he said, a lot of people don't know this, but one security breach for a small business can be the end of your business. It can absolutely put you out of business. And so, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there. I have a lot of viewers who are small business owners. When I started my business for the podcast, there were so many things I was completely out of my depth on. And reaching out and actually getting some outside help on those things was a game changer. So methodworks.com, that is methodworks.com. Tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast and you will get that free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring. All right, we're going to move on to our segment, Unbelievable. Although I do believe in UFOs, so maybe I shouldn't use a UFO for unbelievable. Big UFO believer.
I think you can still say it. It's still unbelievable, even though it's that's true.
When you look out at the universe, it's like, wow, that's unbelievable.
Exactly. Okay.
All right, thanks. This story is beyond infuriating, and it, you know, it is an organ, but I think it's something that would concern me in Washington State as well. And I'd be very curious to know from anyone if you've heard of this kind of stuff happening in Washington State when it comes to the foster care system and to the state of Washington. And I think it also underscores a huge issue I have that's playing out in Washington State with the government trying to force its ideology into households. You know, we had that bill that Democrats are pushing this legislative session that amounts to government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids, where if they wanted to get some sort of gender-affirming care, as they call it, and you as a parent wouldn't let them, they could run away from home to a youth shelter and say, my parents won't let me get gender-affirming care, and so I'm going to stay here at the shelter until I can get it. And they couldn't tell your parents where you are. So they can hide your child from you if you don't want your child to get some sort of gender care. Which is wild, because that's equating that to like physical abuse, which is insane. So this is a story out of, and I think we have the New York Post article on the story. There is a, it says, Christian mother sues state for denying adoption over her gender beliefs. There is an Oregon mom of five, and I've got a picture of her here, I'll show you. And she wanted to adopt a pair of siblings in the state of Oregon. But she was denied because she would not sign a document that essentially said that she would allow them to and support them in seeking gender-affirming care if the children so chose. So just think about that for a moment. You have this mom of five. You have two kids in the foster care system without a family of their own. And you have a woman who, by all accounts, is a wonderful mom and a wonderful person from everything I've read. I haven't read anything else that would question her suitability to be a parent. And she wants to bring not one child, but twins. She wants to bring siblings into her household. But because her faith does not align with Oregon's beliefs on gender identity, she can't bring those two kids into her home to give them a safe, loving environment to grow up in? Is this really where we have come as a society? And again, I'd be curious if any of you know anything about Washington's Department of Social and Health Services. I think it's the Department of Families, or maybe that's a part of it. I'd be curious what our state does around gender issues when it comes to parents and foster care. So Jessica Bates, she's filed this federal complaint against the Oregon Department of Human Services. And again, she claims that this is why her adoption of these twins was denied, because she has a stance against sex change treatments for children. And so she says she was asked by a state official if she would, and this is according to the Free Beacon, that if she would support giving sex change hormones to a child. She said she considers it child abuse. And then she got a letter of denial informing her that her beliefs violated Oregon state law on foster adoptions. This cannot be where we are as a society. And we are still really, I think, at the beginning stages of even understanding what gender hormone therapy, what gender transition surgeries, what they do to youth, the long-term implications and ramifications of that. So the fact that that would almost be a mandate from the state of Oregon that, hey, yeah, if these kids grow up and they want to change their gender, you would have to sign something saying you'd allow it, is not only unbelievable, but I think it's genuinely dangerous considering that we truly don't know any sort of long-term implications for some of the care that they want this mom to preemptively agree to. So that is absolutely unbelievable. And I absolutely want to hear from anyone who has any knowledge of how ideology finds its way into the foster care system. Because I know I'm maybe speaking for Nicole here, but that's something we'd be really interested in diving into and investigating. All right. I've been a spokesperson for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic for a while now. In fact, you might start hearing my endorsements of them on the radio as well. I heard John Curley giving endorsements for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, but he uses my weight loss in his endorsements. Because John Curley's in great shape, right? So he's like, yeah, I saw Brandy the other day. She looks great. She lost a bunch of weight. It's okay, John. You can do that. So I've been on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan since November. I lost about 30 pounds in 2 months on the plan. Nicole looks at me because, like, I hate showing people the photos of me
so
before.
I'm so proud of you willing to show this photo all the time.
Why? Because of why, Nicole? What do you – why? Because you don't think I look very good in the other one?
Well, no. It's just when you lose it, you don't ever want to see that photo again, right?
Yeah.
So I've lost some weight. I don't want to see a picture of me 6 months ago ever again.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I love having them as a sponsor because our sponsors help make the show work. But I also feel really good. And it makes me feel good when I hear from undivided viewers and listeners who are like, hey, Brady, I lost 20 pounds. I have a couple of people who are doing it with their spouses, and they're like, we both shed a bunch of weight. And I had somebody email me saying, oh, I'm going to Hawaii. What's your advice for sticking on the plan while in Hawaii? And one of the things I said is like, look, life is life. If you ever do a diet plan, I get so carried away with these commercials because I'm like a big fan of it. If you ever do a diet plan where they say zero cheating ever or it won't work, like, that's probably not a plan that's actually going to fit into your life. So what I said is, like, you know, enjoy yourself. Talk to Dr. Ryan Coogan over at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic and tell him, like, hey, I'm going on vacation. What do you recommend? But also just realize that you see such quick results that, like, this is a plan where if I'm like, I was off a day, I just get back on the next day, and it's just really not the end of the world. So anyway, schedule a free consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan over at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Go to eastsideweightlossclinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com and tell them you heard about them from me, Brandy Cruz, on the Undivided podcast and do a 15-minute consultation. And yeah, you could be on your way to a slimmer you before summer. How wonderful is that? Okay, let's touch on a couple of things outside of Washington State before we get to Florida Report with my sister. So this is wild. Donald Trump, right, he goes and he gets... He answers to charges in Manhattan. He goes back to Mar-a-Lago in Florida, and he has his national address. And some networks chose to take it. Fox News took it. Others did not take it at all. I believe ABC News was one of them. But when they played back on Good Morning America clips of Donald Trump's speech, they included a blur of his podium that blurred out the, you know, text this number, text Trump to this number, and it's basically, then it would ask you to donate money to the Trump campaign. So they blurred that out when they went back and when they aired it. And what I think is interesting about that is, in theory, I actually don't hate the idea of news outlets or news networks making it a practice to blur that, because that's essentially campaign advertising, and that's why they do it on the front of their lectern. Matt Gilbert will kill me if I keep calling it a podium. It's a lectern, Matt Gilbert. I get it. You're very passionate about that particular word. I always hear it in the comments from him. So I would actually be just fine if news networks made a practice of, like, we're not going to give you free political advertising. We're going to blur out whatever, you know, you put on your podium, because all the politicians and candidates have started to do that because it's actually very smart, you know, and they'll put it on the signs that people are holding. But the problem is that ABC News hasn't done that for other political candidates. You know, they haven't done it for the president of the United States, for Joe Biden when he's giving a speech. And so if you were consistent on it, totally cool. No issues with that whatsoever. But they're not consistent on it. And so anyway, ABC News and Good Morning America put out a statement about it saying that they told the Daily Beast that it was a misunderstanding. That's essentially what they said in their statement. It was a misunderstanding. At least they're acknowledging, like, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. But misunderstanding, let me pull back the curtain a little bit for how things work in a newsroom. So we had an incident. I think I'm legally allowed to discuss this because I don't work there anymore. I know when I worked there, it was like, don't talk about it to anyone. You probably remember this if you've been around for a while. We had an incident at Fox 13 where an editor went rogue and decided to manipulate a video of Donald Trump, made his skin more orange, made his mouth like really big and like slowed it down. So he just looked like a weirdo. And it played on our newscast. And of course, people were like livid, rightfully so. And that editor got fired, which I was really proud of our news director at the time, who was awesome, Erica Hill, who straight up fired the editor, like, no excuses, like, you're gone. And they had to do like all this computer work to figure out who actually last touched that video before it went to air, to figure out who was to blame, because the editor, I think, initially denied it. But in a local newsroom, those sort of errors can happen very easily, or in that case, it was intentional. It's very easy in a local newsroom for someone to go rogue and put something on TV, which is terrifying, but staffs are pretty small in local newsrooms. And so you don't have, after that, we tried to put in some layers of review, but sometimes things are going on the fly. If somebody wanted to really screw up a newscast and they're like, this is my last day, I'm going to, you know, ruin this newscast, they could do it. And that's terrifying. Not the case of the network. That is not the case of the network. Especially on a show like GMA or the Nightly News, you have layers to everything. So you want to call it a misunderstanding, but more than one person had to make the decision to blur that lectern and then for it to air. So that was intentional on the part of more than one person. Again, I don't care if you make that a regular practice, ABC News. I kind of like it. I like no free advertising for political candidates. Make them pay for that. That's how news stations get a lot of money during the election cycles. Mm-hmm. You make them pay for that advertising, and they should have to. But you have to be consistent. They weren't consistent. They should just come out and own it. And I think, and hopefully, ABC News, there's some discipline. Have you read anything about discipline?
I haven't seen anything about that, but I would also say, call it a mistake. It was a mistake for that person to make that decision. It wasn't a misunderstanding.
Right. Yeah,
be
exactly.
Honest.
Yeah, and that's just like, just be honest. Like when that Trump thing happened at our station, our news director was very honest. Like, this was the actions of one person. That person has been fired. It wasn't like, we're going to put them on paid leave while we investigate. It's like, no, we're going to fire them because this is a private corporation and we don't have to do what the government does, where it's impossible to fire anybody whatsoever. So that was ridiculous. Let's go to North Carolina. There is a state representative in North Carolina. And I was sort of like, gosh, do I want to discuss this today? Because it's a state rep or whatever. But I think she is following in a pattern that we're seeing more and more often, actually from both parties, where you have more moderate members of the parties who decide, like, this is not for me. The party has gone in one direction and it's just not working for me. And so Rep. Trisha Cotham. She is a Democrat in the state house in North Carolina. And she came out, did a full press conference, and said she is moving to the Republican Party. And she said in the press conference that her rationale was feeling like she simply could not disagree with members of her party without being attacked. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Mm-hmm. She said in the press conference, I've suffered many attacks since I've been up here, from Democrats in the party, from blasting me on Twitter to calling me names to going after my family, going after my children. She didn't name any sort of like who it was that was being vicious to her within the party, but she said that this has happened not infrequently. She said they certainly will slice and dice you in a second with malicious, vicious, untrue rumors and do not celebrate your success. And we have seen that in our state in a big way. In fact, in one of our Truth Tellers interviews, which you should really go watch, it was with Jim Farrell, who is the Democratic mayor of Federal Way, but he was a Republican back in 2012, switched, wasn't kind of happy with the direction of the party, switched to the Democratic Party. But now, I mean, he ran for King County prosecutor in November as a Democrat against a Democrat. But the party basically shunned him because he was like too moderate. And, you know, he was pegged in mailers as being right wing, like this Republican, when he's a Democrat. But he's not the kind of Democrat that they like. And we've seen an active, and this has been active, rejection and attempt to rid the state house of moderate Democrats from their own party. I have talked many times about State Senator Mark Mullett, who is a moderate business owner Democrat in Issaquah. And Governor Jay Inslee was so mad with the fact that Mark Mullett wouldn't lockstep on every single thing. Like, I think what really made him mad is Mark Mullett voted against the carbon tax that was like the governor's baby for so long. So that the next time Mark Mullett was up for re-election, Governor Jay Inslee did something he'd never done before. He campaigned for the opponent of a sitting Democrat. He was actually, this was during the pandemic. Inslee was so mad at this moderate, Mark Mullett. Inslee was out in Issaquah sign-waving for the opponent of a sitting Democrat, a seat they already have. And so when I hear this state representative in North Carolina who says, I have been vilified, I have been ostracized by Democrats, I can't dissent at all without being subjected to these vicious attacks, that's happening here too. Now, I will say, of the Republican Party, I see too many Republicans further to the right who, if I hear the freaking word rhino one more time, I'll throw up. You have these, I'll just give you an example, House Minority Leader J.T. Wilcox. He's been a solid conservative Republican for like 30 years in Washington State. And then people brand new to the party, brand new to like the political sort of movement who maybe were brought in by excitement over Donald Trump, calling him a rhino. It's like, you've been a Republican for 1 minute and you want to call someone who's been a Republican pushing for Republican ideologies for 30 years a rhino? Hate the phrase rhino. And also of Republicans in Washington State, you can't afford to ostracize a single person. Like, you can't afford to like want everyone to be in this pure little bubble because you don't have the numbers. You need everyone and then some. So it's just really odd. And that's why I just think for this woman, what I would like to have seen from the state representative, Tricia Cotham, is for her to just give a middle finger to both parties and to say, no, I'm not going to jump ship. Like, I want one of the parties to earn my vote. I want one or earn my allegiance. And the Democrats aren't, the Republicans haven't. I wish more people would be comfortable just being independent until they feel like a party has established itself in a way where I can go in there, I can dissent, I can do what's best for my constituents and for people without feeling like the party is like holding it over my head. So I'd like to see that more often. Who was that? Senator Kyrsten Sinema did that. Senator Sinema did that. She went from being a Democrat to being an independent. And that wasn't much of a surprise because look what happened to her. She was followed into bathrooms and screamed at and vilified by members of her own party. So why would you be a member of a party that will not let you dissent on a single thing? So I thought that was very, very interesting. Okay, in our efforts, we do Florida Report with my sister every Friday. And I know some of you were like, but you're not doing a Friday show anymore. And you were like, what's going to happen to Florida Report? Well, I'm happy to tell you that Florida Report is here to stay. It will now be on Thursday. So let's get to our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello. I see you're back in Florida.
I am back in Florida.
Thanks for coming up to assist us with our expansion and everything else. You were a busy bee.
I was, and you guys are still busy, so the fight continues.
Yeah, I was telling you before you got on, I'm like, let's just go. I'm in a mood today. I'm just stressed out. So I feel like since you're my sister, but also our guest, I can just tell you that.
It's true.
Yeah. So it's been interesting in Florida. I've been the site of some interesting political news. I don't know if you heard, you know, Donald Trump and a bunch of charges, et cetera. Before I get to the story that we have lined up for today, it was like craziness outside Mar-a-Lago when Trump came back.
Yeah, they really show up in numbers to show support to Trump in physical person too. It's pretty impressive, to be honest with you. And I'm not even a fan of Trump, but I'm fairly impressed by how strong his fan base is.
One could even say that they're loyal, which is what the Trump campaign is now demanding of supporters of Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, the Trump campaign in an email sent earlier this week to DeSantis donors, it was obtained by Fox News. It emphasized that now is the time to demonstrate your support and join Team 47 early. The two things the memo illustrates are the president's huge numbers and Governor Ron DeSantis' collapsing numbers. And that's a direct quote from the email that was sent out. DeSantis still hasn't announced his bid, but Trump has. And I think all this stuff going on in the news is actually might have tightened his supporters' support for him. But he's definitely making sure that his, you know, financial backers know that he's still in the race and they should show loyalty to him moving forward with their donations.
Yeah, I don't like this idea that you have to be loyal to me, but that's been big for Trump, his issue of loyalty. But also, I think that both things can be true. I think you can have Republicans who don't like what's happening to Trump, but who also don't want him to be president. And I actually see a lot of that. And even some moderates who've very much distanced themselves from Donald Trump, like Rep. Nancy Mace, she's even said, look, I'm not a Trump fan, but I just am looking at these charges and I'm just not sure there's a there. And so, yeah, I don't think you have to be the loyalty you have to decide. Either it's Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump. And there's a lot of Republicans who aren't going to pick and will probably stick with DeSantis, but speak up for Donald Trump. Let's see. You guys have a bill that actually has bipartisan support down in Florida, pretty overwhelming bipartisan support. And this is interesting because Mike and I live in an HOA, so I'm very intrigued by this. It would prohibit HOAs from prohibiting certain kinds of flags from being flown.
Correct. This bill in particular, and this bill actually comes after a couple lawsuits happened across the state. One, somebody filed a lawsuit against his HOA because they asked him to take down his Black Lives Matter flag, and that one's still being litigated. There was another case that, you know, the homeowner actually came out on top where they asked him to take his police support flag, the one with the thin blue line on it, down. And he actually won that case. And I think that kind of prompted this whole situation. This bill specifically protects homeowners' right to display the U.S. flag, Florida flags, flags supporting law enforcement and other first responders, as well as the flags of our country's military branches. But it does not support, well, it will still allow HOAs to prohibit the display of other flags, like those representing LGBTQ communities, causes like Black Lives Matter. And in addition to that, flag supporting political candidates will still be up for debate in different HOAs, depending on their own rules and restrictions.
So I agree with part of this. And our HOA, I think, is pretty strict. And like, we can't have, for instance, signs in the ground of like political candidates actually in our yard. But what bothers me about this law is I'm totally American flag, great. The flags of our military branches, great. Flag of Florida, great. Now, I'm not against Blue Lives Matter flags or like the thin blue line at all. Absolutely not against them at all. But I think when you're explicitly allowing that, but not other, you know, like a BLM flag or an LGBTQ flag, I feel like that's when it gets into picking and choosing causes. So I think the law should protect the things that are very obvious, like, okay, the American flag. But then when they start to get a little more specific, I think that's where it loses me and sort of your First Amendment rights and your right as a homeowner. So I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I'm in the same boat as you. I mean, it shouldn't be, you know, supporting police shouldn't be always a political thing either. Like, people are, that's their job, you know, and I think it's totally fine. I don't think anybody would say anything about a firefighter support flag outside, but I think the Blue Lives Matter, the thin blue line flags would probably always create some sort of debate within a community. And it does suck that it's like that. So I'm with you. I don't really know how I feel about it. I'm kind of in and out about it, but the bill only has one more committee stop in both the Senate and the House, and the four committees that it's already passed through, there's only one vote for no. So it seems that people that are in charge of making the decisions think this is totally fine.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not outraged by it, but I do think that besides the obvious ones, and maybe just like American flag, Florida flag, besides that, I think you have to be either all in or all out. Because then when you start to limit and pick and choose, that's where you get into trouble. And that's where people are like, that's not fair. And people get triggered, etc. All right, Miranda, good to see you. We miss you here in Washington, but I'm glad you're back in sunny Florida.
Yes, it's nice and warm here. I do miss you guys, but not the rain.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Thank you, as always, to Miranda for her insights on what's happening in Florida. I love Florida Report because they never run out of stuff. And it's going to be ground zero for all the fun in, or not fun, or depressing activity in 2024. Okay, let's get to your comments, shall we? On the subject of the record violence that we're seeing on our streets, Mike writes, which we just need to find a way to raise taxes. That should fix it. Yeah, I'm surprised they're not suggesting that already. Cheryl, because the criminal knows not much is going to happen to them in our state. And that's really what it is. I mean, when you, what stops people from committing crimes? it's the fear of consequences for those crimes, right? And so when you kind of take that away, of course there's going to be more crime. People who don't have regular jobs that are providing actual money from a legitimate sources coming in and just decide it's easier to be a criminal and to back up my truck and steal an ATM from a convenience store and then drive away when police pull up, of course. Stephen wrote, they have simultaneously made it easier to commit crime and get away with while making it nearly impossible for law-abiding citizens to defend themselves, totally contradictory to the U.S. Constitution and the oath they took. Could not agree more. Mark, also on the subject of violence, is there a way to teach common sense to the Democrats? Hold on that. I have not found one Democrat who will actually want to listen or see the truth and do the right thing. It's just gotten crazy. I disagree that no Democrats. I mentioned a couple of them. I think Mark Mullett has really been instrumental behind the scenes in the state Senate in trying to really talk common sense into people. I think that the Democratic Party is about 50-50 in Washington State, where you have, I mean, you had 20 Democratic co-sponsors on the original version of the Pursuit Fix. But what I think is the problem is when the party takes precedent over people. When you get in the caucus room behind the scenes and you say, okay, well, I know you guys all support a Pursuit Fix, but these people don't, and we don't want the disagreement in our caucus spilling out publicly. That's the true problem here, I think, is the party just sucking the individuality out of every single lawmaker and forcing them to abide by what party leaders want. Nicole, you want to read some nice comments on the show?
Sure. I like this one from Mary, doing all I can to tell people or to let people know about this live cast, which is exciting. And
thanks,
she calls
Mary.
It wonderful.
Thanks, Mary. Your check sweet. Will be in the mail for marketing. Appreciate it.
And then a comment from YouTube. I just want to say thank you for having a noon show. Nothing can fill Dory's spot, but honestly, this is the closest and the best. I know it's not the main focus, but thank you for being a watchdog for us. So
yeah, it's been interesting behind the scenes because, like, you know, I think that we both love watchdog stories, but mm-hmm. also realize that there is a mission to this show that we need to make sure we're fulfilling at the same time. And so the story selection process for Undivided is so, it's very unique and different because mm-hmm. it's like, it's got to be a story we like and that we think you'll like, but it also has to be a story that's either rejecting these false divisions or it's talking about people who have been able to overcome and say, hey, yeah, bipartisan basis, this makes sense.
Absolutely. I think, yes, I am having to shift my brain a little bit on that.
Yeah, but we love, and like I said, with the foster care system, and I really want to hear from you guys, and I'll read some comments on the foster care system in a second. When ideology is getting in the way of something the government is doing, that's totally inappropriate. And in the case of what happened to this mom in Oregon who wants to adopt twins but won't consent to saying, yeah, I'll get them gender surgery if they want it when they're older.
And they have not expressed any concern about that. The kids themselves at this point, there's no concern about that yet. So why are you even discussing it?
Super strange.
It's crazy. But we should remind people that they can still, as far as the watchdog stuff, if you want to, yeah. submit tips or ideas that things that are watchdog and show content, I don't know,
right,
things like that, then you can go to the website.
Yeah, because we'll be trying to expand written content for subscribers on Patreon, and so mm-hmm. some of that stuff makes really good written content, so please send your tips and I'll tell you how to in
from you
just a moment. On the issue of foster care, Rosemary said, my nephew and his wife applied to do foster care a few years ago in Oregon and were denied because they would not agree to celebrate a child's decision to change their gender. That's very problematic, and I hope the courts end up agreeing. Aaron said, that is so beyond disgusting of what happened to this Oregon mom. This is the kind of stuff that makes us want to go full-on anarchist on some days. Please don't, Aaron. Please don't. The state is continually pitted against children's best interests in the foster system. Although, it's funny because anarchists, like, kind of, they're on this spectrum where they kind of meet. You know, it's like you have the spectrum. Because it's like libertarians and, like, far-left people meet on, like, some issues. Like, my sister, I think she's kind of an anarchist, but mostly because our dad was very anti-government. Mm-hmm. Like, he was, like, a constitutionalist. And so she's, like, not one of the crazy, like, I'm going to dress in black and cosplay ninja anarchists. But she definitely, like, got that from my dad with, like, being very, I don't want to say anti-government, but, like, anti-taxes, like, that kind of stuff. So I think it's interesting how, yeah, I guess there you can be across the ideological spectrum, but, like, I guess be an anarchist in some fashion. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, that does it for the show today, our final show of our first week doing this. I want to mention that we do, we are going to do a special show for subscribers every Sunday. It'll only be for subscribers on Patreon and Locals. I'll show you how to find that in just a minute. And so if you're interested in that, it's going to be a much more relaxed show, in-depth conversations, being able to hear from subscribers and some of the questions or thoughts that you have on some of the big stories that we discussed during the week. And so I think it'll be a really fun addition to Sundays. Happy to get back to doing a show on Sundays. So if you would like to find out, how do I watch the show? How do I subscribe to support the show? How do I listen? Just go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And you can find all of that stuff in one easy place. Undividedpod.com. Thanks, you guys, for listening and for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback.